And welcome to episode 66 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about getting non-gamers to game with us. Gateway games are great, but if you can't get them to sit down in the first place, you've still got a problem. We'll look at what makes someone a non-gamer and how you might be able to convert them. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gier, and Adam Harrison. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. So I did this thing. We had a contest last week where Emil Jiljam and Steven Seitz both won boxes of games.
Amazing.
So what do you do when you win a box? Well, when you give away a box of games, you put all the games in the box and then you try to lift up that box.
Is that difficult?
It was not easy.
Oh. So these are going free?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that... So turns out Emil's from Sweden, but he did contact me. He's like, I'll cover shipping. I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to put more games in a smaller box. So I kind of like the bigger games are going to Steven. The smaller games are going to Emil to try to get them overseas. Even the small box is like 25 pounds of games going to Sweden. Wow. Steven's, I think, is probably 45 or 50 pounds right now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm going to probably split it into two small boxes. It might be easier to ship because I'm not sure that I... Lifting the box, I could do it, but trusting it to go through the mail...
I feel like even Southwest would charge you for that one.
Yeah. So anyway, that was last week. The next 2 months, and actually, I already know what we're giving away in January, too, so I'm going to spoil it. But first, we're going to say for our... Well, I should say welcome to new listeners if you're new. We give away things every month, and we were just talking about what we gave away last month. Listen last week, and you'll find out what we're talking about. This month, we're giving away a copy of Pandemic Legacy Season 2. We're doing it twice. We're actually giving away in November and December. The November drawing will be November 28th. So if you enter before then by emailing us at tabletopgametalk.com. No, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com.
There you go.
With the subject November giveaway. Actually, November/December giveaway. It's either one because all of your November entries will carry over for December for this contest only. But if you enter by the 28th, we will do a drawing and I will ship out a Pandemic Legacy Season 2 to you if you're within the continental U.S., Canada, and probably Mexico too. If you're outside of that, be prepared to spend about $60 in shipping. I'll still ship it to you. Just be prepared that that's what it would cost. Might be cheaper to buy it in your local game store. We'll see. If you win, we'll get in touch. Now, December 19th, we will make another drawing, although the deadline for that one will be December 17th. So if you enter by December 17th, whether you enter now or in December, there will be another one. And my goal is to get it out before Christmas because I think it'll be a great game to play over the Christmas break. We are still looking at ours that's sitting on the table.
Still in shrink wrap even. I almost opened it yesterday and started going through the bits and I was like, no.
You should do that because if you have it set up when we get here, then we can play a game.
We are recording a little bit later on Monday. That might have been my plan for yesterday if we had recorded then. All right, you guys are busy, so.
Well, I think, so next weekend's Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep.
And Kitty, you are still in town, right? You're going to the burbs for Thanksgiving, but you'll be here for the weekend.
We're actually going to Wisconsin, but we will be back Friday.
All right. So the real question is, Josh, when are you getting back for Thanksgiving?
Oh, some point on Sunday, but I've got a feeling it's pretty late. We'll see. I will check.
So we might be playing Pandemic Legacy Season 2 without Josh.
What? No, you can't do that. You can't do that.
They'd get back earlier.
I already booked it.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We got to get a game in, though. If we don't do it Sunday, we can definitely do it Monday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, to recap, we're giving away two copies. Enter now. Email us, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. November/December contest. Drawing on November 28th and December 19th, we'll be doing the drawing, but the 17th is the date for entry. Now, I said I know what I'm giving away for January. I'm only going to say it in this episode. I'm not going to say it again until January. So I don't have a Kickstarter this week. Well, I am going to note that Kickstarter changed their interface, I think, yesterday. And now it's all this modern, sleek, white, and empty space stuff. And I'm still getting used to it. It's not my favorite design pattern, but it's okay. But that's not why I didn't back anything. I just didn't have time.
Modern, sleek, and lots of white space isn't your design pattern.
I thought that was exactly your design.
You're an Apple fanboy. That's like their thing.
I hate the current Apple design.
Oh, good.
I hate the Apple interface. I hate it. And Android's not any better because they have the exact same interface. Sure. It's like,
I just feel like Apple goes a little bit further on the, we're going to hide everything because we don't want stuff everywhere. And then you're like, I can't find anything.
Well, I'm okay with the hiding of the stuff as long as what they don't hide looks good. And right now it's sort of on the fence.
Okay.
So, but that's not why I didn't, like I said.
This is our new podcast format where we just talk about anything, mobile device user interfaces.
We talk about whatever we want.
I'm trying to get back to Kickstarter, sort of. There is one I was looking at. So just before we started recording, we had a little bit of a political debate between Josh and Spencer, but so I was looking, and one that I'm probably going to back is Battle for Biturnia. So it's kind of an 8-bit board game, miniatures, card game. So
you had me 8-bit.
Yeah, the art is all 8-bit, and Biturnia is sort of like the old, now I can't even think of it. Anyway, any 8-bit role-playing type of thing. People are screaming at me.
Legend
right
of Zelda, the first one, The Link to a Past, or?
No, it's even better than that. It was the very first massive MMO game where it was all top down three. Anyway.
Oh.
People are going to email us and be like, this is the game. Britannia. Am I thinking of the encyclopedias?
You're thinking of the encyclopedias is all I can think of.
All right. Well, Battle for Biturnia. Biturnia. I probably will end up backing this one. But I didn't back it, and it is not my nature to just talk about any old Kickstarter, but I wanted to talk about something.
Wait, you didn't back a Kickstarter at all, then?
I didn't, but I do want to talk about a Kickstarter that was fulfilled that also has nothing to do with games.
Brilliant. I want to hear it.
So every once in a while, I back something that's not a game on Kickstarter. And this one was a 9-pod click and grow system. So Google click and grow. This thing's amazing. And I'm going to sum it up with, it is Keurig for gardening.
That doesn't make any sense.
These little plants come in like little soil pods, and you drop
like a Keurig pod
that looks like just like a Keurig pod, but it's like you just take it out and you drop it into this it's a container with a wick on it that goes down and touches like this water basin thing. I'm describing it horribly. Google click and grow, you'll understand everything. And you put it in there, and it has a light over top of it. And the light will turn on and off automatically. And it has different LED colors and stuff. So there's red and
white.
Why
can't you just put it in the windowsill?
Because when it's cloudy, and like right now it's the winter, so it's only light like 5 minutes of the day.
Okay.
It's really, it grows better this way. Okay. But I put it in, and it's like only been a week, and already there's plants growing. And it's really cool. And in another couple of weeks, there'll be strawberries and tomatoes and chili peppers and basil.
I mean, when you told me this, I was like, oh, it's like gardening for people who don't want to do anything.
That is exactly it.
And this is so hilarious because I know you as the person that finds the most convenient version of everything. Like, we borrowed your tent to go camping once, and it literally, like, you just pull it apart and it just pops up in like a minute. Not even a minute, like 10 seconds. Yeah. And I'm like, of course Chris has this. He doesn't want to do anything. It's amazing.
There's so much more time for gaming when you don't have to worry about all the other stuff.
I agree. I like efficiency too.
Yeah. See how I circled that all the way back around the game?
Yeah, very good.
I'm interested to hear about how this stuff tastes.
I'm really excited for it, but it is. It's just one little soil pod.
Like the backyard strawberries and tomatoes that like you grow upside down, like, you know, those ones.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that they don't have a lot of flavor because there's not a lot of nutrients in the soil and stuff. So I'm interested.
I am going
maybe
to give,
they do a better job. Maybe this is what Kickstarter's doing.
Yeah. It says it's 1 to 2 weeks to germinate. So it's on track for that. Says it's about a month to 2 months for full growth. And then you get to enjoy them for another month or so. So I will give weekly updates on how my plants are going.
Awesome.
Along with Kickstarters, there's, like I said, a few games. But anyway, Kitty, your name's still on here for this segment intro, but I'm going to still make Josh do it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. The first one is from Joe Kell. You wanted demographics on cribbage players. So here are the ones I know. I'll start with myself. I'm 23 and from Minnesota. I think that the game is actually really common in this state for people ages 15 plus because people typically learn it at their cabin from their grandparents or parents. Most of my buddies in high school knew how to play, and we would occasionally play when we were together in a group of 2 to 4. I also see pretty common on church retreats when I chaperone them, but usually it's one player teaching another player, thus endless cycle continues.
Yeah, so I thought this was interesting. Last week we talked about card games, or a deck of cards and the games you play with them, and cribbage came up. I don't think we've had as big a response on any other game. Maybe Pandemic Legacy Season 2. We've had a number of people saying, oh my God, I can't play. I want to enter the contest, blah, blah, blah. But cribbage, really close runner-up to Pandemic Legacy Season 2.
Because our next email from John Lewis is, hey, tabletoppers, I'm 28 years old, and I have absolutely played and still play cribbage when I can. I learned about 6 or 7 years ago when I was in college, and we played it all the time through graduate school. I really love the game and wish it were more mainstream. Another element Chris didn't mention in the show that I think adds a bit to the game is that for every hand, the players are dealt more than 4 cards, 5 or 6 depending on how many players, and then they discard into the crib, which is the extra hand that the dealer gets to score after all the other hands have been scored. This just adds a little strategy and thought to the game that makes it really fun. Highly recommend.
Yeah, I think I mentioned that there was a crib, but I forgot about the scoring for the dealer.
You got like halfway through.
Yeah.
It's a hard game to sum up.
Yeah. You really have to play it to learn it. And then your first couple of games, you're going to be like, oh, I could have called that as a score. I could have called that as points. And but yeah, last week's episode made me want to play cribbage. So, all right. This next one, Josh, you're going to read part of it.
Sure.
But Miles, I have to shout out to... Miles sent us an email. He binged the entire series and sent us an email with feedback on almost every episode. Now,
it's amazing.
We could possibly dedicate an entire episode to read that email, but we're going to pick and choose elements over the next few episodes instead.
Absolutely. So yeah, Miles Clark says, hi guys, Australia is cooling. I have finally caught up. I've listened to the whole lot, including the side chats. I feel like I've come to know you guys as friends sitting around a table. Chris, I'm going to try and live up to your great example. Josh, I think it's great to have a little of the mother country flavor. Kitty, I find you are the best as you bring balances to the force. I mean, I agree.
The best.
I agree with all of that except for the Chris bit.
Yeah,
what
I don't.
Great example is he talking about? I mean,
I'm pretty sure what he's talking about is just binging all of your disposable income on games. And I would wholeheartedly endorse
yeah,
this.
Yeah, maybe it was sarcastic.
We can only hope it was sarcasm.
You forgot to put the air quotes around great.
Right, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so I agree. Kitty is a force of balance.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, Sam sent us. So we had a question last week on essential expansions. And
we didn't do a good job.
We didn't do a great job because I couldn't think of really any essential expansions. And of course, last night I'm setting up a game and I'm reading the expansion for the game because it's new for the game. And I'm like, oh, I would never play this game without this expansion going forward. And so I wanted to take a note and mention it on the podcast. Well, Sam emails us and lists 5 different games. And he just happens to put this as, I think, the very first one. No, second one. On the list of like essential expansions, which I completely agree. So I don't want to steal Sam's thunder. So I'm going to read this from Sam. Games with essential expansions. Totally disagree with you guys on Carcassonne. He says he feels the expansion, The River, is essential. Now, I've not played with The River.
I haven't played with The River. I think we just have Rivers and Lakes is the name of it. And I think it's maybe just in our base game.
And we don't
even notice anymore.
Yeah, it's just part of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that could be. He says it adds a lot to the game and only changes the initial board setup. And you can play with or without the others, but always include The River in every game. The one that I was setting up last night, and if you follow me on Twitter at Game Master Chris or at Tabletop Game TLK, you'll see a picture of my Star Wars Rebellion setup because that's going to be the first game we're playing in the game room. Now I have everything on the shelves and the tables set up. It's a temporary table. The new table is coming.
Fancy tables yet to arrive.
Yet to arrive. But Star Wars Rebellion has an expansion called Rise of the Empire. And Rise of the Empire gives you 2 different sets of mission cards that you can use. If you played Star Wars Rebellion, essentially both sides are trying to complete a certain number of missions. The bad guys are trying to find where the good guys' base is. The good guys are trying to complete missions to, you know, basically turn the universe against the bad guys. But Rise of the Empire makes combat far more interesting. It gives you more different missions, more missions that you can play with. There's like two sets. It also gives more units that you can use. And none of them really take away from the game. They all just add more options without adding more rules or fiddliness. It changes a couple rules for the better. So I'm like, yeah, once I put this expansion in, I'm never taking it out. He also mentions King of Tokyo. It's a great gateway game and works well for new gamers out of the box, but the power-up cards make the game a lot better and makes each monster a little different from the others. I'm going to put an asterisk next to this one because I don't 100% agree with Sam. I do agree that it makes the game better, but if you're teaching it to a new player, I would say leave the power-up cards out for that first play and then add the power-up cards in there. But typically, if you've played the game before, there's no reason not to play the power-up cards. Seven Wonders Duel with the Pantheon expansions. I would agree with that. Seven Wonders Duel is a great game. The Pantheon expansion adds a lot more choices that make it a little bit more interesting. It's a two-player Seven Wonders game. And then Pandemic. As much as I love Pandemic, it can get repetitive. After a few games, some of the modules, such as Virulent Strain in the On the Brink expansion, breathe new life into the game.
I disagree.
So you just like the base Pandemic game?
I don't. Like the base Pandemic game, but I don't think that these ones add that much to it. I think if you're doing Pandemic, you should be doing Cthulhu or Legacy.
One of the variants.
Yeah, one of the variants. I think that the variants have more fun and a little bit less of a just straight puzzle solving.
Yeah.
A little bit more chance, a little bit more going on.
Yeah, I will say that Pandemic is not a game that I would go to. Even for the topic that we're talking about today, Pandemic may not be something I would recommend.
Huh.
And we'll get to it, but Pandemic Legacy, loved it, loved it, loved it. Pandemic, the game itself, just seems very repetitive to me, so it's not as drawing. I think if you add in some expansions and variation, you can get a few more plays out of it. But it's not like once I add that expansion, it's like, okay, now I would never take it out. Because it's still going to get repetitive pretty quick, to me.
I feel like when I add in the expansions, I'm just like, well, now I'm going to lose every time. I still play it on iPad as one of my, like, I'm just going to sit here and kill 45 minutes, play a couple games.
Although I will say that the different character roles might be something that I wouldn't remove. I would just add the roles.
Yeah.
And always leave those in there.
Because they do add some more roles.
Yeah. So you could leave all the base Pandemic rules, but just having the roles in there. And that's something I would say globally for expansions. If there's extra roles or extra sides.
Characters.
Yeah. Those I'll always just kind of include because, again, they don't really change the game, but they just give you more options to play.
You have to be careful because sometimes they do try to tie it to the expansion where, oh, this character uses this thing from the expansion differently than other characters do.
Yeah.
So you have to watch out for those ones. But
all right, fine.
In general,
those characters, out of my game. All right.
So we're going to a quick question. This one is also from Sam. Does your enjoyment for a particular type of game change over time? How do the changes in games you like to play impact your enjoyment of games you got on Kickstarter? And do you consider how the lag between ordering and receiving a Kickstarter game will change your desire to play it?
So the first question, does your enjoyment for a particular type of games change over time? I would say probably absolutely for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go through phases.
Well, yeah, you didn't really even like co-op games until recently when we played Pandemic Legacy, and now you're, like, loving it.
Yeah. Well, and also the current batch of co-op games are just really good.
Okay, so that's part of it.
And I think that might be taking me away from wanting to play other kinds of games, because it's, like, that camaraderie I'm getting from co-op games is taking me away from, like, maybe a miniatures tactics game that I would normally like to play before, but now I don't really have a strong interest in. Speaking of which, I never did spoil what I was going to give away in January because you guys distracted me. So but this is all right. We'll see. No, I'm gonna interject it right now. Right. Kingdom Death Monsters is a $250 base on Kickstarter. It's rated really, really great on BoardGameGeek. Everyone loves it. Everyone has great things to say about it. I got this box. I opened it up. I looked at the miniatures, which in every other game. Modern game miniatures are basically pre-assembled, look awesome. I expect to take them. That's great. This one, sheets and sheets of little plastic bits that I have to put together.
twist them out careful so you don't break them.
Exactly, to the point where each little hand and fist are separate little bits.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, no, I'm not. This game could be the best game in the world. I am not touching this. I am never going to put the time in necessary to put these pieces together. It's a very sought-after game. People love it. And one of you will have a chance to win it in January.
I love that.
Is a type of game I will no longer have any interest in playing or doing. I don't want to put together my games.
Right, I love someone with patience and snippers needs to win it.
Yeah, I love that you're really selling this giveaway that you're giving away.
Like, I looked online to see if people were complaining on BGG, and no, there's tons of things about talking about how to put the miniatures together, the best way to do it, what order to do it in. Like, nobody's complaining about it, so like, it must just be me.
Right. There are some people out there who, like, part of their enjoyment of some games is the miniatures. What is the one I'm thinking of where there's just like, that's, I feel like 50% of the game is like assembling the miniatures.
Assembling the miniatures? Like, well, Blood Bowl also have miniatures that you have to ascend.
Like taking out and painting and fussing.
Oh, Warhammer.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yep. And that's, if that's what you want, that's great. But that goes back to Sam's question is like, are there a particular type of games you lose over time? Mm-hmm. At one point in the past, I had no problem doing this. It was like building models and putting that all together and sealing the seams and all that stuff. Now, no.
You have those tiny drills. And yeah.
I'm a click and grow guy these days. Drop the pot in and just step back and see the results.
Nice.
So what do you guys think? Is there any games that have, like, kind of changed over time for you?
I go through phases with games, but I usually come back around at some point. So like, I wouldn't worry about like ordering something on Kickstarter, and when it shows up, like maybe I'm not in the mood to play it then, but I'll want to play it eventually. So but I don't really order a lot. If I'm going to order it, it's going to be something I'm going to want to play at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's like, I had the thing for like competitive, like I always go on about Warlight, but I was like really into that game. And I was like, you know, climbing the ladder, you know, the rankings ladder. And I was loving that. I was like really binged on it for a few months. And then I just kind of burnt myself out on it. And I haven't really played it since. I have some amazing memories from it. But you definitely sometimes can like burn yourself out. And I guess that's the thing for me is burning myself out too much.
Yeah, sometimes. I used to like heads up games like Magic. I played Magic way back when it very first came out, and I used to love going to tournaments, and I ranked pretty high in them. I just got exhausted of always having to compete. And then Dice Masters, I would go to tournaments and play that, and like it was a very, very friendly community and really enjoyed it. And then it just got to the point where I was like, it's just not worth the stress to try to stay competitive. So I just don't do competitive games anymore. I like stuff that's a little bit more laid back. How did changes in your game you like impact your enjoyment of games you got on Kickstarter? So I think Sam's point here, he had a little bit of an example here, was he might see a game on Kickstarter that he really wants to play right now, and then he'll back it. And then by the time it comes,
because there is that lag time.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, 6 months more, years sometimes,
yep,
before these ship out.
And it's still interesting when it comes. And I'll say I've started to get a bunch of Kickstarters in, and some of them I'm like, oh, this is really cool, and like this is a great game, and the quality is fantastic. And others I'm just like, oh, this is another head-to-head card combat game. I'm like, I've played so many of these, I'm going to put that on the shelf and not worry about playing that right now, you know. And it does really depend on my current mood. Like right now I'm looking for smaller, faster stuff that I can just pull out and play a few games and then put away. But if I get these bigger games, Kingdom Death Monsters, then I'm just like, I can't invest in this. And maybe that's a great example of something like, oh, this looks really cool.
That's a good thing for you to think about as well, because obviously you do have a bit of a problem when it comes to Kickstarter.
So, I don't know what you're talking about.
So now that you're getting them and seeing that, oh, yeah, I was obviously watching a video on this game and got really excited in that moment and impulsively was like, yes, I'm buying that. And then it comes to you and you're like, I'm just going to put it on the shelf.
Although you just gave me a great idea.
Right.
I just need to watch the videos again from the Kickstarter campaign to get myself re-excited about the games I just got.
I just need to be sold on it again. Yeah, that's true. You do. Yeah.
Because sometimes you get a game and you just look at the box and think, whatever. But when you see the hype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
those videos definitely made you buy it in the first place.
Yeah. And also sometimes watching other people play it. when we were at GameholeCon, there were a bunch of games where I had kind of totally gotten burned out on like territory control. And then I'm watching people play Scythe and Blood Rage and
Cry Havoc.
And I was like, I want to play all these games again now. Like, I thought that I was sick of marching armies across boards, but I'm not.
Apparently not.
Nope. Yep. Nope. Never.
All right. Speaking of being sick of things, I think people are sick of off topic. So let's press this button.
In this episode, we're talking about getting non-gamers to game with us. What makes someone a non-gamer? Can everyone be converted? What are some tricks that we can use to get someone to game? And how can we make sure they enjoy the experience enough to play again? We may not be experts in social behaviors, but we're about to act like we are.
Well, hey, we can be experts in anything. We have a podcast.
We have opinions on things, and we're always right.
Kitty's dying over there. You could laugh out loud. It's okay.
I was trying not to spoil it because I was just reading some of your bullet points.
Oh, I have not even done that.
I didn't look at them until just now. I'm really excited for this now.
But the first perception of gaming is the first one, because all the listeners are hearing laughter. Oh, like Monopoly? I used to play that as a kid.
So, but that's kind of the thing. So let's take a look. What makes someone a non-gamer, right? Because there is really no such thing as a non-gamer. There's nobody in this world that hasn't played a game. And if you played a game, you probably had fun, because we're built genetically to play. It's like what we do as humans.
Right.
So there's no real such thing as a non-gamer. So what do we, like, when we think non-gamer, and we fully admit that a lot of times when we think gamer and non-gamer, most people think video games. Obviously, we're talking board games in this sense. But what makes someone like a non-gamer? Like, I don't want to sit down at a table and play a game.
I mean, you know, like someone, I guess, who plays all the Hasbro games, like the, like you, like you've got on your bullet point, the Monopolies, the
category,
the ones that everyone's played, but they haven't played anything beyond that, I guess.
Well, they may not have played, you know, they played as a kid, but they haven't played anything in the last 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why? Why did they stop?
I don't know that I know anyone like that. Maybe I'm just like going to be bad at this topic, because
everyone you know is a gamer?
Everyone I know is either like a really big gamer or at least a casual gamer. Like, I don't think I know people who don't own like at least Settlers of Catan or Splendor or Ticket to Ride.
See, I definitely know a lot of people, and especially like at work. So, I mean, people that you worked with, you don't, I guess you don't know, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but I work with a lot of people and they say, you know, what do you do, you know, when you're not working or whatever, and I'm not really shy about anything. And so I was like, oh, I have a podcast on board games, which normally does not lead to more conversation, oddly enough. They're just like, oh, okay.
Well, so that's how you know.
I live in some weird sort of bubble, I guess. I don't know.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said that to quite a lot of people. Most of the time, they actually ask me something else about it.
All right. Well, they usually ask something, but it's kind of like morbid curiosity versus actual curiosity.
I don't think it's that negative. I don't feel like I've got that from people.
All right. Well, maybe it's just me.
Yeah. I don't know how you're broaching this subject. I mean, I agree. I know some, I think I know a lot of non-gamers. Gloria is definitely a non-gamer. My partner. So she has been, you know, dragged into playing some games with us. But she has the games that she likes. Like, she really likes word games. And she'll play Scrabble online with her friends via Facebook till the death, you know, like, and other word games she'll love. But yeah, I mean, most games, I remember once I was playing Warlight and she was like, oh, you're not a gamer, are you? This was in the first like year of us being together. It's not a gamer, are you? And I was like, how dare you? I mean, you know, she's mellowed a bit on the subject now, but that gives you an idea.
I find it interesting because, so if I go out to like a local bar or restaurant or something, and I tend to be fairly social, so I tend to make friends with the people who work there. And a lot of the people, because you're talking early 20s, college age, you know, works at a bar type of thing, they don't play board games. It's just not something they would do, not even something they would think of. Yet I'll watch them play Candy Crush in the corner, like non like, oh, I got to go try to beat this level, you know?
Yeah.
So they are gamers. They just don't realize that the types of games they like could be expanded into like sitting around and working.
Yeah, Potion Explosion. They'd love that one if they're into Candy Crush.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up your favorite thing. Cards Against Humanity.
Yes.
They've all played that.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and it's actually one of my bullet points. So we always talk about the show notes. We do a lot of show notes on the off-topic segment. On the on-topic segment, I literally have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bullet points. And one of them is like just games to mention. And Cards Against Humanity is one of them where these are party games where if you have a group of people together, that's another thing I get a lot. Oh, I'm into board games. Oh, if you play this game, Cards Against Humanity, A, it's not a game. B, yes. But.
Well, technically it's a game because there are ways to gather points and win.
There are ways to gather points and win.
It is very much like Monopoly, though. No one plays by the rules.
No one plays by the rules. That's true. Yeah, you typically don't play to win Cards Against Humanity.
No, that's very true.
You play to have a good time.
Yeah. Yes.
And
which is great, yeah.
Like, why you play any game.
This is my first trick. Cards Against Humanity is my first trick to get gamers, non-gamers to game.
Wow, you will use the dark arts of Cards Against Humanity even though you hate it so much.
We are in a time where we just have to use whatever is available.
Right, right.
Actually, yeah. I want to read Steve's. So this is on our Board Game Geek thread. So you can get easily to it by going to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. And Steve, this is probably one of my favorite inputs. Christy, yours was very valid, but Steve's cracks me up. So Steve says, for me, I use peer pressure. I invite them to get together with people that we both know, who else also play games. Then I pull out a gateway game, ask everyone if they want to play, and the gamers all say yes. And the other person will either say they just want to watch, which is okay, or they are willing to play. If they just watch, it's still making them more comfortable with the game, so it's a win as well. Next time, they'll be more likely to play. And this is the important part. I figure if peer pressure works for making people do stupid, terrible things, it should definitely work to get people to do something fun.
That is a genius idea.
I'm just saying.
Chris was reading this before the show, and Spencer had a good point. That sounds like a great way to build resentment among your friends.
Like, but if it teaches them how to have fun, fun resentment, still resentment. I mean, fun.
Well, if they have fun, it worked great. If they don't have fun, then they're just like, well, I'm never going to Steve's again.
Yes. But
it's a trap.
I think that's a bad friend, though. Like, what? You have one bad time at Steve's and you're not willing to go again? Like, come on. You're his friend.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, have you met Steve?
It's a trap.
So I would say I do kind of agree that this is a decent way of getting non-gamers to game. And it's maybe not fair to completely blindside them, but one of the things that I think makes people most hesitant to sit down and play a game is fear of not being sure of what's going on. Or, you know, Christy mentions one of the big things is like sitting down and maybe learning, having to learn a big rule set. So something that's easy to learn is key, but also somewhere where you feel like everyone is inviting and everyone's trying to do the same thing. Being that one person that's curious and like, oh, I would play if other people were playing, that doesn't kind of let you get over that hump. But if everyone else is playing, it's much easier to say, okay, I'll sit down and I'll play.
And we've talked a lot, and we've done episodes on gateway games and with filler games,
yep,
where, you know, they've got lighter rule sets, they're easier to pick up, and often the scoring is not easy to track while you're playing, so you don't have that feeling of I'm losing the whole time.
Right. And those are the types of games that we should play once we get them to sit at the table, but getting someone to sit down is the tricky part.
So this is the bullet point that made me lose it. Chris suggests you ease them into it like you would with exercise or spicy food. or learning a new skill.
Hey, wow.
Spicy food? How have you eased into spicy food?
I am actively working on Sydney to be able to raise her spicy tolerance so that I can actually eat a food that doesn't taste sweet to me.
That's
so
hilarious.
But you can't just go right to the chili peppers, because if you do that, they're like, no, I never want to touch spicy food again. So if you
like when you had those ghost pepper chips from 7-Eleven. You had them in your kitchen. I was like, it's from 7-Eleven. It's not really going to be spicy.
I told you they were gonna be spicy.
It was like blew my head off, and I can take some spice.
Yeah, and that's the equivalent with me saying, hey, person who's never played a game before, let's play Twilight Imperium. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
No, they're never gonna want to go back in game again. This is a great analogy, metaphor. Sure. But that's really kind of what I'm getting at.
It's a simile. You said like.
Maybe it's a simile. But
they
like
had
exercise.
The same argument in Stranger Things season 2. Just saying. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, if you're going to go, you don't run a marathon your first time out. You have to build up to it. So I'm just saying, be careful with what you're putting in front of your non-gamer friends.
That's true.
We need to create a couch to 5K for gamers.
That would be amazing. And yes, we're going to do that.
It's definitely doable.
All right, sit down. Start with Cards Against Humanity. All right, you've played 3 games of Cards Against Humanity. Time to move up. To Splendor. You got this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think
now, Garrett Dimitri Carcassonne.
I think Cards Against Humanity, the next thing you want to do there is a werewolf for a resistance. Because Cards Against Humanity is a very social game. The next one adds a little bit more structure around it, and there is a clear winner.
I can see
nothing
Kitty.
Can turn you off of a game more than a bad social deduction game situation.
She's got a point.
All right. You have to know your friends. You have to know whether or not a social deduction game is going to be okay.
Because when we were on Chris's cruise wedding, there was a game of Werewolf, and literally someone who'd never played it before the next day was like, hey, did that girl hate me last night because I accused her? I feel like she hates me now.
All right. How about this? Werewolf Resistance or Insider?
Insider is a great one.
Yes. So Insider is basically 20 questions with a hidden helper. It's not even a hidden traitor game. It's a hidden helper.
It's a hidden helper. You feel like you're winning no matter what, really.
So that game, again, has structure. And at that point, you're starting to have a winner and a loser. And you're winning and losing in teams. And it plays very quickly. So it's like, oh, that was a lot of fun. Now we can go, it's like, oh, here's this other game. And I can start segueing to something else.
I feel like you could skip Cards Against Humanity and go straight to Insider.
Oh, I think so, too.
Definitely.
Insider's a really fun game.
Yep.
We haven't played in a while.
And Insider's a game you can play without the actual game.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We've done it with cards before, haven't we? Yeah.
I think it's more fun with the actual game.
Yeah.
Because you are going to come up with words. Like, the words that people come up with to play with are sometimes not as good for playing with as they think they will be. It's a lot harder to come up with something that's tricky to guess, but guessable, but like not out there.
Yeah. And I would say having the actual game gets that person used to saying, oh, I'm pulling out this game and I'm setting it up. There's some cards, there's a timer, and now here's the structure. So it's very, very simple, very easy. Like the first time you play it, you want to keep playing it, but it's actually a game in front of you now, which will lead you to the next time. Oh, come on over, we'll play another game. And then you can go up to this is Carcassonne. You know, there's a little bit more tactics and strategy to it. Now, it's a big leap. Insider to Carcassonne, very different kinds of games. So judge your friends at that point.
Which is why I threw, like, Splendor or Century Spice Road.
Yep.
Those ones are good in-between ones there, I think.
Yep. And they can still be a little bit social-ish. I don't want to say this is generic advice, but throw some banter into it. Now, that banter can be encouraging banter, like, oh, you did really great on that, or, oh, I really wanted that, but you took it. Or it can be smack talk, like, you son of a, that was my, depending on your friendships, keeping that banter going.
So you're kind of suggesting take that games as well within that bracket.
Maybe, right? Depending on the person.
Right.
All I'm saying is make sure the game stays social.
Right.
Because if you're going to start at something with Insider, which is a very social game, the next game you want to keep that social feeling.
Definitely.
Some people are very happy sitting down and just looking at a game and concentrating on it and doing nothing else. But I feel like non-gamers aren't to that point yet. They're not to that tactical, I want to be quiet. They're still in that social bubble. So keep your games social.
I have this is actually a really relevant podcast because I have a friend who is throwing a board game party, which also includes onesies. Everyone's having to wear a onesie. And
of course.
But he doesn't really game. And I don't think most of his friends do either. I want to say most of these people maybe have played like a round of Catan or something. They've probably dabbled a little bit, but on the very early gateway games. And so most of these people are non-gamers. He's a non-gamer, but wants to game and wants to get into it. And he's like, we're just going to throw a board game party. But he hasn't thought about it too much. So I'm kind of doing the thinking for him and being like, okay, we got to play something like Insider. And one of his friends was like, oh, we should do XCOM because I played the video game. Yeah. And
no.
Yeah, I didn't think that's a good idea. Right?
XCOM is a terrible idea for a group of non-gamers.
Really into the game. Like, I am a gamer for sure. I don't like XCOM, and it would not be the game that would make me want to keep playing games.
Yeah.
If you had one person who was an expert at that game and could teach it, then maybe you have something there.
Yep.
But if nobody's played it and you're trying to learn it, you're going to spend 2 hours frustrated that there's no rule book, trying to go through the tutorial, losing because the game is incredibly difficult, and it's going to go back to, I never want to play a game again.
Yeah. Good to know. Yeah. I will not bring XCOM.
I feel like we'll have to send you home now with like a stack of games because I'm not sure you've got a collection.
Yes, I am going to have to borrow some games off you guys. Yeah, for sure.
So, and if you're doing, I'm actually looking at the Board Game Geek page right now, and there's a game that popped up and made me think for a two-player game. Maybe you're you really like gaming, but your significant other doesn't as much, or you just started dating them, or whatever the case,
I'm
where you just want to
still
bring
in that situation. Yeah. So carry on.
Santorini is a really good one.
Really fun game.
Oh my god, that would be a good game to bring to this party as well.
Yeah.
Everyone really, it's very intuitive. Like once you explain what the goal is to like pick it up, it's just like three-dimensional tic-tac-toe.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
And
it's gorgeous.
It looks amazing. It's very tactile. It plays up to 3 players, I believe. And it's just like a really good, the table presence makes you want to like, oh, what's that? Let's be engaged in this.
And this one has some expansions where you can play it normal a couple times. And then once they get the feel of that, start adding in, I think there's gods that you can.
Asymmetric powers that take the form of gods. So you've played it with the basics with no god cards, and then you add that in, which gives you infinite replayability and interest to it.
Nice. Yes.
So it would be a good game to bring along.
Bring that one.
And also on the BGG thread mentions that she said she needed this podcast last week because she's staying with a non-gamer this week, and she's going crazy not playing any games. She's like, she finds it difficult to get people to play games when they perceive you as a gamer and themselves as a non-gamer. Perhaps there's an intimidation factor or fear of losing, or there may be a recipe for limited success I've had in she listed some things that she's had limited success with. For the person who is concerned about looking like they don't know what they're doing, you play co-op games. For a person who was pigeonholed themselves as someone who isn't good at board games, maybe walking them through strategies or doing co-op games. Did I say co-op games twice?
You sure did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good point.
But
I
it is
the,
true.
The co-op thing, I think, is a really good point because it's like you've got the other people there to help you, the more experienced people in the room. And so there you're kind of, I don't know, it's like training wheels in a way.
Yep. Well, the person that doesn't know what they would like in a game, play a few quick games and a variety of game mechanisms. She mentions trick-taking games and dice-rolling games, which are part of my bullet points as well. Card games, I understand as a hobby game enthusiast, sure, however you want to put that, we don't necessarily take a deck of cards and say, okay, let's play a game with this. Mostly because we think of that as almost too mainstream. You know, playing...
We're better than that.
The fact of the matter is, they're fun games, though.
They are.
You know, and even something like Cribbage, which is, we're reviving it.
Bringing back Cribbage. Or bringing it south.
We're in Chicago, so we're not that far south. But
I mean, we're south of Minnesota.
We are south of Minnesota. And Michigan.
Anywhere where there's cabins that all have boards hanging on their walls.
That's true. But pulling out a deck of cards, again, is a way of breaking the ice and getting people to sit down because most people are not afraid of a deck of cards.
That's true.
Pulling out white dice with black pips, nobody is afraid of them. Heck, a game of Yahtzee, if it opens you up and say, oh, wait, if you like this, now that we're done with this game of Yahtzee, let me go grab King of Tokyo.
Or role player.
Oh, the role player is not like Yahtzee. But it's still a great game.
Any opportunity. High five to Kitty for that one.
But it's that segue thing where it's like this gets us around and in the right mindset, and then I can quickly pull out this other thing. A game that doesn't take a long time to learn. It should be almost instantaneous to just pick up and go. Again, we're easing them in with a mild food. We're easing them in with, you know, jog for 5 seconds and then walk for a minute type of thing. That's where we're at with these guys.
Wow. Are you like a trainer at some sort of personal development fitness thing or something?
I'm just bringing it back to the simile.
He's starting his new career as a life coach.
I think so.
Speaking of life coaching, though, with co-op games, I think you have to be very careful not to play the game for the non-gamer. I always like to give choices instead of saying, all right, so the best move you can make on your turn is this. You say, there's like, you could do this, you could do this, you could do this. If you do this, this is what's happening. This is what's happening if you take this move. Or if you want to help with this, this is what you can do for that.
Yep.
And let them choose and do not tell them their choice was bad.
Yeah. I'll even take
this is such good advice. Yeah, it really is.
I'll take it a step further. Do not be competitive.
Yeah.
In no way, shape, or form should you be trying to beat this person that you just got to sit down to play a game.
Unless they're into it.
Yes. If they're competitive, fine, but stay at their level.
Stay match level. Really, you have to read the mood patronize of the room.
Yes.
I love it. Just don't tell them you're patronizing.
I will say I'm a big gamer, but if I sit down and I'm going to play with someone because we're at a convention or something, and they put out a game and they're super, super into it, and they start like, you know, they're just, we got to do this and this, and then we're going to do this, and I'm going to do that. It turns me off so fast to see someone that's so into the game that I don't feel like they're into the people around the game.
Yeah.
So just because there's nothing wrong with that if you're with the people of like mind.
Yeah.
But again, if you're trying to bring someone into the hobby, step back away from that. You are not trying to win. You're trying to encourage other people to want to play.
Not being patronizing. You are matching their energy.
Yes. I know. I just did that for a laugh.
But you're not wrong.
It's true. No, it can come across as it real, like it's a easy line to cross.
Yeah. You got to be careful with how you do it.
Yeah. You know?
So I'm just saying keep it to a very mild. Because for me, mild is totally fine. If I give Sydney mild food, it's like, oh my God, she won't be able to eat anything else. She's drinking milk for the rest of the night.
Right.
So it's like, nope, you have to go lower than that.
Yes.
So, you know, sweet barbecue, spicy enough for some people. Bring it down. I can eat a sweet barbecue every once in a while.
Nice.
Let's see, what else do I have
Buffalo
on here?
Buffalo Wild Wings honey barbecue is actually pretty spicy.
That's what I've been told. It tastes like sugar to me. I mean, it is a lot of sugar.
They have two barbecue sauces.
They do. Well, they have sweet barbecue, honey barbecue, hot barbecue, and then regular barbecue.
My goodness.
I know.
I don't think I've ever looked higher on the menu than honey barbecue.
You're really making me want some wings right
now. And aside, when I was in college, I had some friends help me move, and we went to Buffalo Wild Wings afterwards. It was Buffalo Wild Wings and Waxo BW3 at the time. And we ordered 10 of every flavor. And a friend of mine, we started at the low flavor, worked all the way up to the top, and then all the way back down again.
Oh, there's that guy who interviews people, and he basically does that thing, doesn't he? He's got like 6 things of spicy stuff, interviews them in between while their face is going
red. I would love to do that. I have not met a spicy I haven't loved. But that's why, I don't know, I think it's a good metaphor, simile.
Definitely.
Video gamers. If someone likes video games, you already have a leg up in trying to get them into board games. Video gamers are into kind of things that are fast moving, a little bit more like attention grabbing. This is where you can take the games that look really cool and kind of get them into it. You still don't want to spend time reading the rules. Teach as you go, because that's what video gamers are used to.
Yes.
They're used to just plop it down. This is what you can do. And as they play the game, they will learn it. You don't necessarily need to go into all of the different options and varieties that you have at the beginning. Maybe tell them how to win. And that's about all you have to do, just play the game.
You do have to be careful, though, that you don't do the thing that I've done accidentally a couple times where you're, oh, I'll just like teach as I go. I won't like, you know, go super deep into the rules. And then you like do something and they're like, I didn't know you could do that. And then I feel like I've cheated by like holding them back from doing a thing for part of the game.
Yeah, Chris has done that to me so many times. I'm like, wait,
you don't mean to.
Yeah, no, it was an accident. But I'm like, you just killed me. I didn't even know I could do that.
Well, that's the interesting thing about teaching a game is oftentimes you can even tell someone all the rules up front, and then they will forget. Yeah. It's like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. It's like, well, I definitely mentioned it up front.
To be fair, that's probably has happened so, in our...
But that goes back to pick the right games that don't have a lot of rules. So you can get a video gamer to sit down and play Carcassonne just easily. I mean, it's a very visual thing. It's a very tactical strategy thing. But at the same time, the rules are simple enough where it's like, oh, I get this and I enjoy this. And there's a number of other simple games that we've talked about for gateway games and stuff that you can get people in. And the reason they're gateway games is because the rules are so light. And this is what you get with video gamers oftentimes is, oh, can I see the rule book? So you'll teach them and they'll want to answer questions for themselves. They'll take the rule book and look it up.
Nice.
Let's see. Video dice games. Mainstream games. Don't be afraid to play some mainstream games.
Well, also there are like new versions of all these games. Like there's Monopoly Deal, and there's actually a bunch of different Monopoly ones that are better than the original Monopoly and can play a lot faster and better than that game. So find the good versions. You know, a lot of these have been updated. I mean, I don't know what the new version of, I don't know what some other classic games
Monopoly,
are.
Well, Monopoly, Risk.
Scattergory still holds up. It's a great game. Yeah.
Word games tend to be safe for a lot of people. Like I said, I don't really like word games. I almost would rather not play a game at all than play a word game.
Yeah, but you're not a very wordy person. It's not really your strong point, is it?
But something like Telestrations.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great game.
It's super easy to get people to play that.
So much fun.
Yeah. And you can segue that into then something like Insider, which then puts you at a little bit more controlled around a table that then you can segue into a more board gamey thing. You don't have to do it all in one night. Like, once people get the idea, it's like, oh, going over to so-and-so's house, we're going to play a game and kind of just hang out. That sounds like fun. Let's go do that. And they're going to get into that mindset. And then all of a sudden they come over and you have Twilight Imperium set up on the table. And it's like, okay, sit back, relax for a couple hours while I teach you this game. They're going to be ready for it.
I'm going to give a shout out to Pyramid Arcade.
Okay.
There are a ton of games within Pyramid Arcade that have like a paragraph of rule explanation to them. And because they're like the box has everything you need to play like 18 different easy to intro games, you're not stuck playing the same game all night. You can play like, oh, let's do this one three or four times and then let's transition over to a different one using the same pieces, but a completely different kind of strategy.
Yep. And it's great to look at the table, and they're pretty much the pieces for most of the games are indestructible because it's either the pyramids and some dice. Sometimes there's some boards, but even then some of those boards are plastic.
It's also really fun to put the pyramids on your fingers and pretend that you have witch nails.
Yeah, you can do that too. So Christy actually mentions a lot of this basically about keeping the rules simple. Like one thing that will, no matter how great a game is, attempting to wade through something that's too complex is going to push them away and further convince them that gaming isn't for them. So she does mention a few other games. Lanterns, which is a really pretty card game. The theme is as generic as it gets. It's just lanterns and you're trying to match colors. Camel Up, which is like this camel stacking game. I actually think it's a racing game and then the camels can stack on top of each other. Number 9, spelled NMBR9. Quicks, spelled QWIXX. Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride is, I would say, that's the one where you've done Insider, you've done maybe one past that, and it's like, all right, now you're ready for an actual board with your board game. That's where you can go to like a Ticket to Ride or a Catan. I say Ticket to Ride is probably a lower barrier of entry than Catan. It's a little more straightforward, and you don't get screwed as much by dice and by your initial setup location as you can in Catan on your first couple of games.
Lanterns looks really fun.
Lanterns is, I've heard only good things. I haven't picked it up because it's just a deck of cards.
I don't even think I've seen it.
For some reason, I haven't picked it up.
Well, before.
Amazon, press buy. Buy now.
This is how it happens.
She also mentions Cheeky Monkey, which I have no idea.
Oh, wow.
Sushi Go, which is actually a really good game. I have actually played this game. Actually, the only time I've ever played this game was at a restaurant because it's a drafting game. So you get certain cards and you pick your cards and you pass it. And then you're putting out cards in front of you to score the best sushi plates. And it's very easy to play at a dinner table and it's very themed for like restaurant type things. And then Can't Stop, which is a press your luck where you're rolling dice. Again, dice are not intimidating. So playing something like Can't Stop.
Have you got any good recommendations for like a screw your neighbor kind of game? Because I feel like that would be a good one for a party, like the one I'm going to.
So if you're going to, and this is not meant to be derogatory, but a bro party,
yeah,
where everyone is out to just like, you know, it's all about like jabbing at each other and that kind of stuff. Munchkin's probably the best one.
Okay. That's exactly what I was going to say. So. Yeah.
And it's there's so many expansions to Munchkin as well. Okay. But the idea of Munchkin is you're trying to make it to, it's a fantasy-based tongue-in-cheek game.
Right.
So there's a lot of humor in it, a lot of humor in the art, and you're trying to get to level 10. Right. And you're going through this quote-unquote dungeon, but it's really just flipping cards up, and you have this monster deck that you're fighting against. And you can help your friends, like, oh, no, I'll help you with that monster. We'll kill them together, and then I'll get a loot, and you'll get a loot. But then at the last minute, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to play this plus five sword. I'm actually going to play this potion of poison. And now all your attacks cut in half. And, oh, the dragon just ate you and you're going down three levels.
Oh, so nice.
It is so much like screw your neighbor type of gameplay.
Is Munchkin the one that like encourages cheating if you can get away with it in the rule set?
Sort of. Technically, you're not allowed to cheat, but there are some cards that allow you to cheat.
Then it's not the game I'm thinking. Yeah. There's a game that I started reading the rules, and at one point it said, like, cheat. If no one catches you, it's not cheating. And I was like, I'm not going to play this game.
It actually loves rules too much. Yeah.
I do.
It actually could be Munchkin. I haven't read the Munchkin rules in a while. But yeah, that's a very good one. And again, it's very, very easy because it's just a deck of cards.
Nice.
And it's a lot of, like I said, you have to play it with the right group. I couldn't play it with Kitty. I couldn't play it with Sydney.
Right.
I could probably play with you and Spencer, but you'd want to have like five people, I think, is the right number for Munchkin. But yeah, that's a pretty good one as well.
Nice.
So I'd like to give a shout out to some of our past episodes. If you're interested in gateway games, episode 32 is all about gateway games. Episode 61 is filler games.
Yeah.
And those two episodes have a lot of games where we talk about light rules, easy barrier to entry, quick play games.
Yep. Another thing I would say is easy to set up games. You don't, if as soon as someone starts seeing you start unpacking things, they'd be like, okay, what am I getting myself into? And they're just going to probably be a little put off and back away, or just have the game already set up. It's like, you know, people are off in the living room talking, whatever. Set up the game and say, hey, you know, you guys were interested in this game. Make sure it has a really good table presence. Santorini is probably a good one for something like that, where, you know, there's three of you. It's like, oh, let's play this game. And like that, a game like that, you can have a bigger group. Some people are watching while the others are playing. And then, you know, for Santorini, if you're playing a three-player game, the winner takes on two more challengers. You know, so it's like, I'll play the winner type of thing, which is another very common thing for video gamers where, you know, it's you can't play, everyone can't play at the same time, but you'll play two or three people at a time, well, two people usually, two or four, and whoever wins will be challenged by the next people.
When it stays on, I like it.
Yep. So that's another way of kind of rotating in, and it keeps people from needing to feel pressured like they have to be playing the entire time.
I like that.
Any other thoughts or ideas on this one?
I think we did have an episode as well on hosting a board game night. I know
yes.
It isn't exactly the topic, but I mean, I'm going to one and it's a good way to get people in.
It is.
Go back to that one. We go a bit more in depth on how the logistics of doing a night like that.
I think Eve was there. Episode 49 is board game parties.
Yep.
I'm definitely going to listen to it myself.
Yeah.
That's where we thought Josh had been kidnapped.
Yes, we thought Josh had been kidnapped. That's funny. But all of these things, and those episodes really do relate to this, but I did want to do this topic because I was actually asked at GameholeCon. He's like,
yeah.
In passing, it's like, I really like games, but none of my friends are gamers. So, you know, I don't get to play very often. It got me thinking, it's like, well, how can we change that? And, you know, I think, like I say, the biggest advice is just be welcoming. don't pressure them right away. It's kind of like training a new dog, right? It's like
going back to patronizing people again.
I'm just going to use metaphors all over. It's like you just have to start, you know, start easy, lure them in, and before you know it, they're jumping through flaming hoops.
Yes.
See how that worked, right? No?
I've been training my dog all wrong.
I'm certain that he will jump through flaming hoops for you. All right. I think we've done enough damage.
I think we're good.
So, all right. If you're interested in following us on Facebook, you can follow us at @tabletopgametalkpodcast. At Twitter, we're tabletopgametlk, or you can follow me at Game Master Chris. We love iTunes reviews. There's a new one out there, which I will thank next week because I forgot to write it down. But I love iTunes reviews. They're my favorite. If you want to support us on Patreon, you are automatically entered into all of our contests. If you haven't listened, or I haven't mentioned it in a while, we do a contest at least once a month. So we're giving something away once a month. It started out as a way of promoting the podcast, but I don't actually draw anybody in. So it's kind of like, if you listen, you get rewarded. If you don't listen, if you're a patron, you could still get rewarded. So you can check more out at that at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And yeah, if you are interested in giving us feedback, you can always email us, which Josh will tell you about in a minute.
Stealing my thunder.
The Board Game Geek Forum is how we do input. So I put something out there every week saying input on the next episode. What is our next episode about on this one? Oh, that one works.
I haven't looked. Now I have to go.
These guys never know what the next topic is. Sometimes I don't even know until Josh starts reading the outro. But yeah, so you can go over to Board Game Geek forums, and that I have a shortcut to there. So you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, and that'll get you there. So, Josh, why don't you do the rest of the talking?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, Aim for the Flat Top Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbert, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Questra, David Sellers, and Jason Rodney. Until next week, when we talk about board game burnout, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. You know, I keep meaning to thank Terrence in one of these, either the beginning or the end. So I'm going to... Terrence, thank you right now. Terrence goes through all of our episodes and like marks it on Board Game Geek.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how we like get those episodes all linked together. And he has a cribbage board that he offered. He says he has two cribbage boards, and he has a cribbage board he's offered me. So once we get the cribbage board from Terrence, we're going to have to play a game.
Love it.
All right.
Just saying. Thanks, Terrence.